Welcome to STL Community Cast, conversations exploring innovation and influence in St. Louis, Missouri. Join the conversation at stlcommunitycast.com. This week, St. Louis County Executive Candidate Mark Montabani explains why he thinks we need a change and why he is the guy for the job. Hey guys, welcome back to STL Community Cast. I'm your host, Andrew Davis, and I'm very excited this week to bring you a special guest. He is County Executive Candidate Mark Montabani. Now, the primary for St. Louis County Executive position will be on August 7th, and just like about any political race in the St. Louis area, the Democratic primary will decide the race. So whoever emerges victorious here, Montabani or the incumbent Steve Stenger, will become St. Louis County's next county executive. I found this conversation to be very interesting, and Mark Montabani certainly has a very interesting background, a very successful business background. He grew a company exponentially named Ancira and moved it from outside of the city into the city at a time when the opposite was the trend. He really has an impressive resume, and he's self-funded. He's really the political outsider in this race here. I think he's put $1 million of his own money into this race, and he's doing it to try to make a difference. He obviously doesn't need this job. He also says he doesn't want the next political job, which I find interesting. This is the one thing that he wants to do because he thinks that he can make substantial change, positive change, for the region. It's interesting because Stenger's name has been all over the media recently, and today it's out there again, really headline news regarding some campaign contributions that he's gotten from the developers who he worked with on some properties in North County around the Northwest Plaza area. So if you're just reading the newspaper or reading the news, it would appear to me that Stenger's credibility is not peaking right now. He seems to just be taking a lot of fire. But then a week or two ago, it came out that, according to a recent poll, he is actually leading. So I think it'll be a close race, most likely. I think Stenger certainly has his political connections. He's a very well-funded campaign. But Montabani, coming in from the outside, is kind of going to run this with a nothing to lose attitude because that's the position he's in. He doesn't have anything to lose. He's not asking for other people's money to help him get into this position. And I think he has some very good ideas and some very valid points as to why he should be considered as the next county executive here in St. Louis. You can check out other interviews at stlcommunitycast.com. You can subscribe on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Still need to get it on Spotify. It is up on Stitcher. You can also email me directly with feedback or ideas for the show at stlcommunitycast@gmail.com. So with that, here is my conversation with County Executive Candidate Mark Montabani. I'm here with Mark Montabani, County Executive Candidate. Mark, thanks so much for taking the time to join me this afternoon. Let's get started with kind of a quick summary, if you can make it quick. I know your background is deep and impressive, but tell me a little bit about your upbringing and your career. What's led you to seeking the county executive chair?
Tough for an old guy to be brief talking about his life's journey. Native St. Louisan, born just off the hill. My grandparents were Italian immigrants, and my family and I moved to South County when I was a little guy, and I was raised mostly in Afton, parochial schools. The St. Louis question is answered, in my case, with St. Louis U High, Quincy College, and then Mizzou Law School, and then a graduate school, business school at University of Pittsburgh. And from a professional standpoint, I've had what I describe as a nonlinear career path. I used to say checkered, but I think that gave the wrong connotation. Nonlinear career path. I was in the financial consulting business for 5 or 6 years after graduate school, moving around the country. My wife and I lived in Pittsburgh and Houston and Minneapolis and outside Dallas. And then we came home around the time you were born in the mid-80s, and I practiced law for 15 years, co-founded a firm, and which continues today. My practice was general civil practice, not a litigation practice, much more of a transactional kind of commercial business corporate practice. And in 2000, I had a client that asked me if I would consider leaving law practice to manage what was a small family-owned marketing business. And I saw a lot of opportunity and potential for the business. And so I left law practice in 2000 thinking I would be on a sabbatical for a few years running this marketing company. And I never got back to the law. And the business grew and prospered. The family exited in 2005. When private equity partners entered my life, and I went through several generations of private equity partners as the business was growing. It was about a 50-person firm when I began and about a 750 when I left as board chairman at the end of 2016. So we kind of digitized a analog business, a marketing business, and you know, that was a very formative part of my life because I was surrounded by a lot of young people as we were embracing technology and analytics and data. And I might look like this old guy, but I think I think like a younger guy by virtue of having all those young people with me for those years.
A cool part of the Ansira story, at least in my opinion, is the move to the city, right? Or at least the expansion in the city. Can you explain how that happened and what the impact was?
Yeah, so it's a cool part of the story, in my opinion, too. Apparently, we don't share that with everybody. But so the business was growing rapidly, and we had a small office out in Maryland Heights, and we were finding it difficult to negotiate a lease because we didn't know how much room we were going to need, how much space we were going to need 5-7 years hence relative to the term of the next lease. So we came upon the notion of acquiring a building which would provide more space than we needed at the current time but would give us room to grow. So in 2005, the family that still had an ownership interest at the business in the business at that time and I acquired a dilapidated old warehouse in the city at near the intersection of Jefferson and Locust. Seven-story building, 175,000 square feet, and we relocated the business there. We renovated the space. It turned into kind of a vibey marketing type of corporate headquarters. You know, blew holes in the floors to put internal stairwells in, you know, it was a very loft-like kind of space, a lot of brick and the like. And so we moved the company into the city then, I think it was like mid-summer of 05. And the business has grown there. We've grown out of town as well, but I think we moved about 150 folks into that office back then. There's about, I don't know, 325 or something like that in that office today. And we've bought parking lots and I think contributed to the redevelopment of that part of downtown West, and I'm very proud of my my role in that. For a couple of years after, we were designated as one of the 100 fastest growing businesses in inner cities in America, and so as I said, I'm kind of proud of that.
I imagine at that point or shortly thereafter, you started getting a lot of phone calls if you weren't already receiving them from civic groups.
And that's exactly right. By virtue of us bringing some jobs into the city, we were welcomed by city government and leaders, and we were very popular for a while. And actually, you and I have some similar experience, perhaps, with the downtown movement, because the downtown organization, what was then called the partnership, the Downtown Partnership, asked me to join the board, which I did, and then 4 or 5 years later, I ended up following your father as board chairman for the Partnership for Downtown St. Louis. I spent a couple years chairing that organization, and felt a great a commitment to try to help our downtown and our broader region achieve its potential. And that was, in fact, really my introduction into local civic affairs, and where I am today is clearly an outgrowth of some of those early activities developed around the community and the downtown region.
Looking back on that experience, are you happy with what you were able to accomplish in that role with the Downtown Partnership, or was it more difficult to navigate perhaps than what you had expected going in?
You know, I feel pretty good about the condition of that organization and the momentum in downtown St. Louis at that time. I've been off that out of that chairmanship since 2012 anyway, and during 9, 10, 11, the downtown was experiencing a bit of a renaissance, much of it along Washington Avenue. And we were in the middle of all that, and I felt energized by the potential of downtown St. Louis at that point in time. I think we've lost a lot of that momentum, unfortunately. And you know how boards work. You roll off the board, you roll out of the chairmanship role, other people get their turn, and the organization sometimes changes its priorities. And in my view, we've lost a lot of that positive momentum that we had developed back in the late aughts and the early teen periods of this century down there.
Aside from just job creation and having more people move into the city, what were some of the priorities? I mean, I guess it's hard for me to imagine, based on what you were doing and contributing to, how one would want to, you know, shift away from those priorities. Those seem kind of like the big two, right? Or are there other things that I'm overlooking?
Well, when you think about, I'm not sure this is responsive to your question, but so feel free to come back. But when you think about a downtown region, many of the cities that, or many of the issues, challenges that urban communities have are reflected in that microcosm of downtowns. And this is not unique to St. Louis. I think this is common to most downtown regions. For example, you know, we had certainly economic development issues. We had issues having to do with transportation around the downtown community. We had issues associated with homelessness and with crime and with the potential for educational institutions to engage in the downtown community. It's tough to build residency in a downtown region if there isn't some thought about schools for children. And the universities within the community were thinking about, some did, establishing branches in the downtown region. And so the whole of or many of the issues associated with urban communities generally are reflected in that downtown microcosm. And I found that incredibly stimulating, challenging, and it was energizing for me, frankly.
So what made you decide to run for the county executive office?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
We don't, none of us, I think, do something that has the magnitude to that this decision has of affecting our lives in many different ways on the basis of a single factor. From a community standpoint, I have been frustrated with the trajectory of the region for decades. I tell people today frequently, especially young people, Andrew, that the St. Louis that I grew up in my case, what was predominantly the 1960s, had a very different feel to it than the community has today. There are statistics to support that, but it's beyond just statistics. I mean, the city of St. Louis, when I was a kid, was the 10th biggest city in America. And the region, as late as 1970, by 1970, I'm in high school only, but the region was the 10th largest metropolitan area in the country. And at that time, at least to the thinking of a kid growing up in Afton, I thought our peer communities, cities around the country, were places like Chicago to some degree, but San Francisco and Philadelphia and Detroit, cities which were in the top five or six or seven in the country in terms of population. And now, as you know, we look around, we have a whole different set of peer communities that we compete with. And even besides, beyond just the population issue, there was a verve here. There was a vigor in the community. Didn't work well for all parts of our community. I'm the first to acknowledge that. But again, for a white kid growing up in the county, I felt like I was kind of in the center of the universe. You know, the space program was on everybody's mind in the 60s, and much of that work was being done in the St. Louis area, McDonnell Douglas and General Dynamics, and Houston got all the publicity, really, because Mission Control was there. But my teammates and friends, parents, were working at those companies building those spacecrafts, and it was exciting to kind of have an inside seat view of some of that stuff. And, you know, as today, I guess, the Cardinals were a big deal, but a bigger deal in some respects, because there hadn't been the expansion, and Jack Buck and Harry Carey were announcing games that were kind of heard coast to coast when Camo X was was an even more preeminent national presence. I tell young people that, and I think they find this shocking, that, you know, when Jack Kennedy was president, he read four newspapers every day, and one of them was the Post-Dispatch. And so St. Louis was clearly a community of prominence. And in the 60s, we actually landed two professional sports franchises. The Blues came here. The Football Cardinals came here in the early 60s. We lost the Hawks, unfortunately. But we were still very much in the building mode. The downtown was being renovated with the Arch and Busch Stadium, too. So the community felt like it was sort of on the move. Civic progress. And the business community was very active in trying to create economic development opportunities here. And now I look around, frankly, and I see struggling to keep up with Nashville and Kansas City having a lot more pace for change and growth. And it frustrates me. I have great affection for this place. My children and grandchildren are here. It's been very good to me and my family. And it distresses me that we are falling behind further and further every year. And I attribute a lot of that to substandard leadership, leadership that doesn't come with a vision for what a community ought to be focused on and be and how it should be progressing. And so if I can provide a different sort of leadership, I feel like it's my responsibility to try.
There's been a lot of focus on government fragmentation over the last, you know, 4 years since the Ferguson events, and perhaps it was there before, but it was just less noticeable or kind of less front page news, if you will. I've talked a lot on this podcast to different people about their view on regional government structure. If all of that were to stay the same, as I think we would agree it is very likely is to follow that, the same path that it's been on now for over 100 years, how would you be able to make some of the change, the positive change from the county executive seat within that framework that I think we can all agree is limiting?
Well, complicated question. There your precept there, I wanted to make certain I understand, because I don't believe that we can't change relative to our fragmentation. Our fragmentation, just to make sure that all of your listeners understand, has to do with the distinction between thinking regionally at some level and thinking along the lines of the fragmented local governments that we have in play here. It is at least a two-headed monster. We have the city-county divide, wherein the city and the county are wholly separate, but for a few isolated instances of collaboration, wholly separate government entities. And then we have this multiplicity of municipalities that exist in St. Louis County. Even beyond that, frankly, we have Illinois, the east side, as another segment, and to the west, St. Charles. So we're clearly fragmented in a way that most communities are not. The interest in thinking about this, I think, was reignited in some way by the horrible incidents in Ferguson, because it seems to have put a spotlight on smaller communities' struggles to maintain revenue streams and effective sources of revenue, and how that is affected by policing and the like. On the other hand, you know, Andrew, this issue has emerged a number of times in St. Louis's history. You know, in 1926, they were having the same discussion that we're having today relative to the city, county, and the like. And so we seem to come around to this from time to time. We haven't been able to rectify the city-county divide, and that is one of my objectives, frankly, in seeking this office. The fact that the city and county exist as separate entities inhibits a lot of regional opportunity. And I'm going to draw a simple example. The MLS opportunity, which presented itself to our community because the league wanted to expand in St. Louis because of its strong foundation in soccer. Our fragmented governments, the city and county, was the biggest reason, in my view, that we were unable to get that together, because the league wanted to locate in downtown St. Louis near other stadiums and the like. And I think they have aspirations to be kind of a central corridor kind of business. Mm-hmm. And so they desired to be located in downtown St. Louis, at least as their first priority. And what we saw was the county opting out of any participation in facilitating that regional amenity. Now, I happen to think that would have been a neat thing. I'm not the biggest soccer fan in the world, but I happen to believe that communities prosper when they deliver a high quality of life, and amenities like professional sports are one of, certainly not the most important, are not the only, but are one of the lists of amenities that communities should offer their residents. So what happened there was a proposal was made wherein the city was asked to bear all of the responsibility for construction of a home, a stadium for that team. And the county chose not to play. The county stayed out of it. And the consequence of that was twofold. First of all, I think a lot of people in the city said, wait a minute, this is a regional opportunity. Why are we the only ones having to deal with the financial stress, if any, associated with this opportunity? And I think they were right. And the county, primarily through, I think, the negligence of the county executive, decided to take a pass on investing or participating in that opportunity. And the consequence of that was that we couldn't put the deal together to the satisfaction of the city voters. Now, look, there's 300,000 people in the city of St. Louis. Many of them are moderate, some low-income people who have other priorities than investing in a soccer stadium. I totally understand their reluctance to go it alone. And I resent the fact that the residents of St. Louis County and their leader chose not to participate. That's not thinking like a region. That's why that soccer team is going to be in Nashville, because our regional divide failed us. So I think most economic opportunities today for of substance present themselves on a regional level. When Amazon came here, they were thinking about the region, right? They weren't thinking about the difference between Maplewood and Richmond Heights or between Florissant and Ferguson. They were thinking about this region. And you know, the thought there was, we can do something in downtown St. Louis, we can do something in Illinois, and whatnot. Regional decisions are what influence big economic development opportunities in this day and age. And we are out of step because we don't think like a region. We think like subunits. So I think it's incumbent upon us to address this, at least this city-county divide. And the way I propose doing that is to invite the city of St. Louis to rejoin St. Louis County. Now, I get asked every day, Mark, what do you think about city-county merger? I don't think about city-county merger. And if you ask me that question, I'll tell you I'm not in favor of city-county merger. A merger involves a transaction wherein one entity acquires the other and the acquired entity goes away, typically, right? That's not what we're talking about here. And that's counterproductive to thinking about city-county being collaborative, because who's going to win? And we're going to play this same game until we fail to achieve anything. But the city can rejoin St. Louis County without either entity having too appreciative of a change. Now look, Chicago is in Cook County, right? LA is in LA County, right? Minneapolis is in Hennepin County. Most cities, with the exception of Baltimore, are in county. This is not revolutionary for St. Louis to be thought of as part of St. Louis County. In fact, it is in the mainstream for a city to be part of St. Louis County. But we struggle with this for a couple of reasons. First of all, we've had a historic racial divide in this community that has created a lot of our division. And so we've got racial implications for some of this stuff. And secondly, there are the fiscal implications, right? A lot of people in St. Louis County don't want to be associated with the city of St. Louis because they believe that the city of St. Louis has a bad fiscal situation. Bond rating was just lowered again. And I understand that. But here's the misconception. If the city of St. Louis rejoins St. Louis County, St. Louis County does not assume any of the city's debts. I'm going to say that again. If city of St. Louis joins St. Louis County as the 90th city, It retains its city charter. It retains its city fiscal status. It retains its mayor, its board of aldermen. It just becomes like a big Florissant or a big Kirkwood, the 90th city in St. Louis County. The people in St. Louis County are not assuming liability for the city's debts. And so we're afraid of something that is not based on fact here. The city can rejoin. The county can accept that rejoinder without incurring any kind of liability. And what it does for us, it allows the expanded St. Louis County, which then goes from 1 million people to 1,300,000 people, counting the residents of the city of St. Louis, it allows the expanded St. Louis County to include representation across city and county lines on the county council. And so we can have a legislative forum for the first time in our lives that has representation from both city and county sitting across the table working on policy together. That's a sea change, and it would inhibit the likelihood of these non-regionally favorable outcomes like the MLS thing does. And in the long run, we will all lose this kind of odd mental tick that we have about the somehow the city and county being necessarily separate divisions. Just as we drive today between Kirkwood and Webster Groves or between Ferguson or Florissant, we would drive from the county to the city without it being a big cultural kind of deal.
That's interesting. So it's no different between Kirkwood and Webster having their separate fiscal statuses and separate budgets and operations in that sense.
Right, right. No, so, I mean, St. Louis County is not responsible for Kirkwood's debts. They don't guarantee Kirkwood's debts. St. Louis County wouldn't guarantee the debts of the city of St. Louis if the city joined the county. So there is really no reason for this fear of financial ruin for St. Louis County if the city joins. The city's still got the burden. It's still got its own responsibilities. It's got its own fiscal status, its own bond rating, and just like every city in St. Louis County does. All right, but we can still make policy together so far as the county council is concerned. County council would probably have to be expanded. Mm-hmm. So if your average county council person today has 110,000 or so constituents, and we add another 300,000 people, we're going to have to add two or three seats to the county council. So it goes from 7 to 10. And now we've got representation of the city. And think about how great it would be to be able to make policy together instead of working against one another, and to really share economic development opportunities because the same deal is benefiting the whole of the region instead of just the city or just the county as it is today.
Yeah, I do hear about the city debt concern frequently, and I've been told from people who I trust that that's not how it would work, but I've never really gotten a clearer explanation of it, so that makes a lot of sense.
That way. And one of the burdens of my candidacy is I have to try to make people understand what this really means, because they fear that that the county will be compromised financially by the city joining it, and that just is not based in fact.
And some people in the county who are, you know, kind of quickly oppose any conversation even of something like this, they may be on some level apprehensive of expanding the county council to include people from the city, right? I mean, is that how some people look at this? Is, we don't want more people, you know,
I mean, maybe. I can't explain all of their thinking, but we're not good. As
right, yeah, exactly. Right?
So St. Louis County, in fact, is one of only six counties of the 100 largest in America that has declined in population this decade. St. Louis County's homicide rate is increasing much faster than the homicide rate of the city of St. Louis. So this delusion of everything being hunky-dory in St. Louis County is, in fact, inaccurate as well. I just think that we have to come to grips with the fact that this is one place. This is just St. Louis, man. You know, to the people in New York, certainly to the people in China, this is just St. Louis. And when we get on a plane, what do we all tell the guy next to us? Where are you from? I'm from St. Louis, right? The world thinks of us this way, and yet we've got these imaginary, well, I guess they're not imaginary, I guess they're real boundaries across the region that we use to divide each other from one another, and they are counterproductive to our economic development as a region. One other story. Mm-hmm. Here's a story I tell to the guy in Chesterfield, for example, not to pick on people from Chesterfield.
But I do it sometimes.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Good. Who says, hey, look, my life is good. Why do I want to think about the city of St. Louis? Well, here's the reason. So you're, what, 34?
Yep.
Okay. So I have a son who's 34, and he went to same high school I went to, and he had a core group of friends when he was in high school that he hung out with, like we all did, and there were 12 of them, and counting Joe, my son, and they all went to different colleges. They were socioeconomically diverse. They were all white kids. But one guy's dad was a postman, one guy's dad was a cop, one guy's dad ran like half of Anheuser-Busch, and they had more money than they knew what to do with. And they all went to different colleges. Some went to in-state schools, some went to east, more prestigious places. They all went to college, all sorts of different kinds of colleges. And so today, like you, there are 34. And of those 12 kids, my son's the only one who lives in St. Louis. The other 11 have all chosen to live elsewhere. And they're just, you could guess, Andrew, where they are. They're in Austin and Denver, and because I suspect you've got a lot of the same dynamics in your life.
Sure, absolutely. And all places I've thought I would like to move at one point in the last
right.
10 years. Yeah,
they're in D.C. One guy's in Columbus, and these are all St. Louis families, and these young men have all decided that there's a better future for themselves someplace else, and. That is a very worrisome sign for our community, in my opinion. And so we have got to figure out how to make this region more economically attractive so that young people are excited about building their lives here. Because if we lose young people, we lose. We lose the game, I think. And so... to that guy in Chesterfield who thinks he's got it licked, his kid may well be the kid who ends up in Nashville. And because economic stagnation doesn't stop at your suburb, it's a regional thing. And so we've got to address this in much more aggressive ways.
Yeah, I think looking at it from a generational standpoint is very helpful. I remember at a meeting for St. Louis Strong, which is an organization which you're familiar, I'm sure. And that was, in my opinion, one of the most compelling arguments of someone who stood up and said, here's the story we have to tell. Do we want our kids to continue living here and their kids and on and on? Well, we briefly mentioned the county council. So let's take the opportunity to talk about what's going on there with the sitting county executive, Steve Stenger. Is this normal? I mean, the amount of friction that we're seeing here right now and the language being used publicly on the record, going back and forth between Stenger and, I'd say, the majority of the council members?
No, this is certainly abnormal. This is an aberration. I mean, especially in light of the fact that the county executive has lost the support of his fellow Democrats. The county council has four Democrats on it, and three of them, on almost every occasion, vote in opposition to the county executive. So this is clearly an outlier, and it is a direct response to his style of leadership. I didn't start this candidacy out of disrespect for the county executive's leadership. I started because I was concerned about the community, and I think we're falling behind, and our forecast and all these things are bad. As I've gotten into this and been a closer observer to the kind of leadership that the county executive delivers, it has become palpably clear that this is leadership at its worst. It is leadership delivered by a person whose objective is only to retain the office, not to serve the public, and who whose stock in trade is dishonesty and misrepresentation. And it is that that has caused him to lose the cooperation of other professionals and the county council. They feel, not to speak for them, but it's clear that they feel like they've been misled on different issues these last couple of years, and they feel disrespected. The county executive's ability to collaborate with others is about as bad as anybody I've ever seen from a professional standpoint. He he is dictatorial in terms of working with others and not collaborative at all. And, you know, sooner or later, as Governor Greitens could attest to, that runs its course. It catches up with you. And so the level of the lack of cooperation is unprecedented for sure.
And for context for people listening, it's not hard to find information about this right now, obviously, but there's been a handful of bills that Stenger vetoed, and now there's talk on some level of like lawyering up on both sides, if I'm reading into it correctly.
Well, you know, this is an interesting, because one of the things that he vetoed, one of the ordinances, bills that he vetoed, had to do with the ability of the county council to have their own legal counsel. Now, I got to tell you, if I were county executive, I would not be offended at all if the county council wanted to have their own lawyer. Why shouldn't they? I mean, they represent a million people. This is a big county. There's lots of stuff going on. Why shouldn't the county council have its own lawyer that it can meet with and that can help them write bills and that can tell them what their rights are relative to vetoes and the whole of governance? Why shouldn't they have the right to have their own counsel? I think they should. The county executive, on the other hand, says, no, you have to use mine. You have to use the county counsel, the lawyer, who reports to him. Well, who does that? Who wants to have a lawyer that is hired by a person that they're in disagreement with? That makes no sense. I think the county council ought to be empowered. I would want to have a strong county council. Mm-hmm. I need the help. I want to work with them. I don't want to emasculate them. I don't want them to be less influential. That's just bad leadership. I've worked with boards of directors and business and whatnot in my life. I always wanted to have a strong board, not a weak board. You want to have people who are informed and energized and smart and capable and working with you. You don't try to beat them into submission. That's a poor form of leadership, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you could compare that directly to basically any business as well, right? I mean, you don't want to have a boss who dictates everything and doesn't give others a voice or tries to suppress it.
No, these are professional people,
right?
You know, they're representing a million, 100,000 residents, each one of them. They've got real responsibilities. They got a fiduciary obligation. They ought to be. They ought to be demanding about their decision making, and they ought to be seeking counsel. We'll be much better off. So anyway, they passed the legislation that would have allowed them to have their own counsel. He vetoed it. They've overridden the veto, and again, it's remarkable that the county executive has lost the support of his own party. Mm-hmm. But that's what you get in life if you treat people like crap. Sooner or later, those people will have had enough. The challenge for the voter in St. Louis County is this. Whether you like me or not, as a practical matter, if you vote for the incumbent, you're voting for a stalemated government for the next 4 years because they are at loggerheads at this point. And I think this is a really bad time for our region to have a government that isn't working, because we're just going to fall further and further behind if we don't.
One thing that you're running on, that I read on your website, a phrase that you can explain, but the corruption tax, as you coined it here, has to do with the procurement process of government contracts in St. Louis County, right? Talk a little bit about how things currently work and how you think they should change in the future.
Well, the corruption tax refers to the notion that to the extent we are making bad business decisions in St. Louis County, our revenues will be influenced. The county's revenues will be influenced. The county will have to increase its revenues if money is being wasted. Well, as we sit here today, there is 281,000 square feet of real estate in St. Louis County that I can point to that is vacant, that either the county owns or the county's paying rent on, and it's vacant. Sometimes people struggle with this. 280,000 square feet would be about a 25-story skyscraper.
Okay.
It's a big building, mm-hmm. right? There's that much space that either the county owns and it's not using, or it's paying on and not using, paying lease rates mm-hmm. on. For example, the juvenile courts building on Brentwood Boulevard, everybody has driven by there 100 times, I think. That building has been vacant for 2.5 years. It's 120,000 square feet. It's been vacant for 2.5 years. It is effectively on the Enterprise campus. I'm told that Enterprise would love to have that space to grow into, and it sits vacant day after day after day. Now, what businessman does that? What businessman has a valuable asset, probably as valuable as almost any property in St. Louis County? It's a wonderful location. And it just sits there vacant. Well, that's negligence, in my opinion, of the worst kind. In addition, we're paying rent on space at 121, I think it is, South Merrimack, which is another 120,000 square feet, which is vacant, so that we could move offices to Northwest Plaza. Which in part led to the developers of Northwest Plaza contributing $365,000 to the county executive's election campaign. So that's corruption, and that is wasteful, and that creates a likely tax on the rest of us.
It is legal, however, up to this point. That kind of, you would probably describe that as a pay to play on some.
I don't know if that's legal, Andrew.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, if there is a pre-existing agreement mm-hmm. that says, "Hey, we'll give you this property to develop if you pay me or my campaign," that is not legal. That's bribery.
Right.
That's crime.
Right.
So I don't know all those facts.
Okay? I guess it comes down to the order of the
conversation. Yeah, it comes down to how a federal investigator evaluates it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but give your, why should people be looking at you for the next county executive?
I want to go back to the Ferguson
sure.
Topic, because I know you've talked about that in the past with other people you've interviewed. The horrible events at Ferguson should have been a hugely motivational circumstance for our community. There's a saying in business, you never want to waste a crisis, right? It so saddens me that we have lost that moment. Now, there's some good work being done again now by the Forward Through Ferguson 2039 mm-hmm. Organization, and I look forward to helping them and working with them, because we've got to deal with these fundamental social issues in our community. We're not going to progress if we don't deal with our fundamental challenges. I didn't bring this up just to undermine, to criticize the county executive, but for a guy who took office in January of 15, 60 days after the Ferguson uprising, to have been so engaged so little in that set of social changes is, in my opinion, reason enough to fire him. These statistics, I believe, as well as I do. This is the fourth or fifth most segregated community in America. Our rate of economic mobility, according to the Gates Foundation, is the lowest in America. I've seen it ranked as high as 42nd out of the 50. Right? It's bad in any case. Economic mobility is the rate at which people progress across income scales, used primarily to evaluate how quickly people are moving out of poverty. Mm-hmm. We do, in the St. Louis area, very poorly at this. We know that there were issues around justice and equity in North County specifically. We have to do better at creating a better professional and middle class for minority members of our community. We have to get better at celebrating diversity and inclusion, and like, and really mean it, not just words. We have to be, because that's what regions of prominence in the 21st century in America do. If we're going to achieve our potential, we have got to be challenged to change. And my beef with the current leadership in the county executive's office is more about a failure to challenge this community to be better than anything else. It feels to me like the county executive, so long as he has his job, he's not going to kind of upset the apple cart. He's not going to challenge this community. And I'm telling your listeners, the only reason I want this job is to challenge this community to get better. We have got to change, or else we're going to end up where we're headed, and that's not a good place.
I have one more question now, because I like that statement, and I was going to ask this earlier, and you may have already answered it, but have things gotten better since Ferguson in the region?
I think the conversation has gotten better. I'm not certain the circumstances have gotten better. I think that, and it's not solely because of Ferguson, I think this community is coming to a tipping point. I think we're kind of slipping out of our skin. There's some good stuff happening in the city. And I'm not just talking about Cortex. I'm talking about even some of the ideas relative to change and the like. But it's not just Ferguson. The NFL telling this community on its way out of town that this is a dying economy. The MLS thing not coming together. Amazon not putting us in the top 20. The combination, the confluence of all of these slaps in the face, coming on the heels of the Ferguson events, I think should be a strong shake of the community by the shoulders, saying, wake up. And I think that's coming through. I think there are conversations today around the city-county thing and government fragmentation, for example, that I heard rarely 5 years ago, and today I can't give a speech without people wanting to talk about it. And so I think there's reason for hope if we get the right leadership. But we've got to get leadership that's got some guts and that wants to change and that has a vision, or else we'll just slide right back into the same old gully that we've been in the last few years.
Thanks so much, Mark Montavani.
Thanks, Andrew. Enjoyed being with you.